Mr. Brown?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Robert Brown. I represent the defendant in this case, the town of Flower Mound. Procedurally, this is before you on a denial of a plea to the jurisdiction based on immunity from suit that Flower Mound brought in response to a condemnation case.
Just as a point of curiosity, how is it in probate court?
Your Honor, it's a good question. There is a...
There's something unique Denton County?
The Denton County Probate Court...
There's something unique?
...has a special statute.
All right, that's fine.
And Judge Don Wendell wrote that statute years ago, and he has, and it's actually very important, I think, to this case, because it's a probate court by name, but it's a probate court plus. It also has the powers of a district court in relation to condemnation cases, in relation to trespass to title, and a very, very unusual
thing. I'm taking up too much time.
Okay. But basically, we were in probate court in a condemnation case where the probate court was, in essence, sitting with the powers of a district court. The trial court denied the plea to the jurisdiction. The trial court basically determined as a threshold issue that Flower Mound did not even have immunity from suit in a case such as this brought by a pipeline company because the case did not involve a claim for monetary damages. The court never really got to the next issue, which was if there is immunity from suit, does the provision of the Texas Utilities Code 181.004 waive that immunity from suit? So there's really two issues here today from our perspective. One is, do Texas cities, are they entitled to immunity from suit in a condemnation proceeding brought by a pipeline company? And then number two, if they are entitled to that immunity from suit, does the legislature's enactment of section 181.004, which basically provides that a gas corporation has the power to enter upon, condemn, or appropriate the land, right-of-way, easement, or other property of any person or corporation, give effect to the legislature's intent to waive immunity from suit? And I think important here when we talk about immunity to understand that there's two types of immunity that's recognized in Texas. There's immunity from suit, which basically is the somewhat now outdated, you know, the king can do no wrong, basically says the government can't be sued in the courts of its own government. And the Texas Supreme Court recognized that concept back in 1847, I believe. And there's immunity from liability, which basically says that even if a government can be sued, can they be held liable? Or is their liability, is it capped or is it uncapped? It's only the first one, immunity from suit, that is at issue here. And remember, immunity from suit doesn't look at the function of the government. In other words, it's not question of, was the government acting this way or that way? It's a question of, is the defendant a government? If they are a government, then they are presumptively entitled to immunity from suit. And if you go back to the 1847 Supreme Court case that adopted this, as well as cases since then, it's very clear that while shielding the government from monetary liability is certainly an important public policy, it's not the only part of immunity from suit. The courts talk about attributes of sovereignty and separation of powers, and it basically is a vestige of our old Anglo-Saxon tradition that basically says you can't sue the government without the government's consent. And I think this really came to pass, or became much more clearly in about the mid-1990s, with various breach of contract cases. Because even though immunity from suit has been around for over 150 years, I respectfully submit that it kind of sat around dormant for many, many years. And you didn't see a lot of cases that talked about it. They mainly talked about, do I have immunity from liability? Not whether or not can I be sued as a threshold issue. In 1997, that basically all changed. The Texas Supreme Court, in a case, federal sign with this Texas Southern University, came up with a ruling that, quite frankly, I think shocked most people, including myself, and all I do is represent cities and been doing it since 1986. In that case, the Texas Supreme Court said that a governmental entity can enter into a contract, breach the contract, receive all the material benefits from the contract, refuse to pay on the contract, and yet not be sued on the contract because of this concept of immunity from suit. Texas Supreme Court said, even though a city or any governmental entity waives immunity from liability by entering into the contract, they don't waive their basic ability not to be sued. And quite frankly, I think this sort of stunned me. I think it stunned most of the jurisprudence. But what it shows is how dramatically important our Texas Supreme Court holds the concept of immunity from suit. It is held in such esteem that basically a decision which certainly many folks would say appears to be very inequitable, very unfair, and would probably prohibit governments from entering into contracts. So who's going to enter into a contract if you can get, in essence, you know, taken advantage of? Or that's a polite way of saying what I'm thinking. And, of course, the legislature responded by passing legislation that did create a limited waiver of immunity from suit for governments when they enter into contracts for goods and services. So, and the reason that's important is while my opponent, Mockingbird Pipeline, has cited a lot of cases from going back 100 years and 75 years that generally talk about the concept of whether a pipeline company has the power to condemn public property, none of those cases address the threshold issue of immunity from suit. Just like for decades and decades and decades and decades, there were lots of cases out there where courts adjudicated breach of contract claims against cities, whether it's for damages or specific performance or repudiation. So you've got decades and decades of contract cases where on its face you could say, hey, looking at this case, I can sue a city. They sued the city here, and they went straight to the question of liability. But it's because nobody raised this concept of immunity from suit. And then some very clever lawyer in the mid-90s raised it, and they've resurrected this entire notion of immunity from suit again. That was a case of first impression. We're now before you in another case of first impression. Just like in the contract arena, there are no cases that have addressed immunity from suit in the context of a pipeline company suing a city under the utility code. Now, I will point out there is no case that I'm aware of, and my opponents have certainly cited no case, that has held what the trial court held in this case, that as a threshold issue, there's just no immunity to begin with. There's no Texas case that I'm aware of that has held as a threshold matter that immunity from suit just does not exist. The courts always recognize the immunity from suit, and then they determine whether or not it has been waived through legislative action or perhaps even the conduct of the government, such as the Texas Supreme Court's Riata case, where the city of Dallas filed a counterclaim and therefore injected itself into the litigation. The court said, well, you can't sue somebody and then turn around and say you're immune from suit because you have actually instituted the condemnation, instituted the litigation process. But the City of Galveston versus State, 2007 Texas Supreme Court case cited in the brief and the reply brief, has basically said that there's this heavy presumption of immunity. And quoting from that case, the court said, this heavy presumption in favor of immunity rises not just from separation of powers principles, but from practical concerns. In a world with increasingly complex webs of government units, the legislature is better suited to make the distinctions, exceptions, and limitations that different situations require. In other words, the Texas Supreme Court in that case and other cases have very clearly held two things. Number one, there's a presumption of entitlement to immunity from suit for governmental entities. There's no case that says differently, other than appellate court cases that were reversed by the Supreme Court that held that.
Well, it sounds like you're inviting the obvious response from counsel that's going to say, yes, and the legislature did.
Well, that's the next point. But since the trial court and counsel have taken the position in their briefing that we don't have immunity to begin with, I need to address that. And I think clearly we have immunity from suit. And the real question is, has the legislature waived that? One thing I will point out, there's a lot of cases that we addressed in our brief that I was quite surprised that they did not address at all. And that's the State versus Lane line of cases. And that's a 1961 Supreme Court case and its progeny. And there they held that immunity from suit does apply when in this state the sovereign is made a party defendant to a suit for land. And they didn't define a suit for land. That was a trespass to try title case. But lower courts have also similarly looked at that and have said that whether you try to adjudicate rights under declaratory judgment or trespass to try title or to try to get a prescriptive easement or an implied easement, if the ultimate subject matter of the suit is land, then the government is entitled to immunity from suit absent some waiver. And in those cases, they found there was no immunity from suit and that those cases could not be brought. I think the State versus Lane line of cases control. It's not been addressed by the other side, and therefore I'm going to assume that they do not dispute that line of cases. In looking at immunity, we look at the modern analysis, the 1997 going forward, basically federal side. And both in the court cases and in the Texas Legislature's Co-Construction Act, it's very clear that it is stated that unless immunity is expressly waived, typically you will not find a waiver of immunity. In other words, the legislation has to say that immunity is waived. That's the general rule. Now, the Texas Supreme Court in the Wichita State Hospital versus Taylor said there may be some instances where the legislature may have intended to waive immunity without saying so. And that from time to time, there's four factors that the courts have looked at to determine whether a less than explicit waiver of immunity from suit may nonetheless still be found. And the first factor the Taylor Court looked at is said, does the statute waive immunity beyond doubt? And one of the things they look at is, would the statute be rendered meaningless without a waiver of immunity? And there's cases cited in the brief, as well as the amicus brief by Haltom City, that talk about that concept, about where the courts have said, well, the statute would have no effect if it didn't apply to government, because it was clearly intended basically to solely apply to government. It's like anti-retaliation by the government. Now, in this case, clearly, if the pipeline enabling statute does not apply to cities, it doesn't render that statute meaningless. They can still condemn land against private corporations and private entities, and they can condemn land against governments if governments consent to that condemnation. So the first factor certainly weighs in favor of Flyer Mound's argument. The second factor is if there's any ambiguity, sovereign immunity is retained. So not only is it supposed to be explicit, but if it's less than clear, if it's debatable, if the issue is debatable, the city wins. The third factor is does the legislation require the state be made a party? And there they're talking about the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act, where it says that if somebody wants to challenge or get an interpretation from a court of a city ordinance, then the city is required to be made a party, even though they're not being sued, in order to step in and say, hey, wait a minute, this is our ordinance. We don't want somebody striking it down or interpreting it in a way that's incorrect. Or challenging the unconstitutionality of a city ordinance, the AG's office is required to be given notice and to become a party. That's not the case here. There's no requirement in the property code that a government be made a party to a condemnation case other than, of course, being the defendant. Now, Mockingbird has taken the position that, well, in order to take Flyer Mound's land, we had to sue Flyer Mound, therefore they're required to be a party. But I respectfully submit that's really not what the court's talking about in that factor. And the third factor is whether or not there are caps put on immunity, on damages, if there's money involved. And there really is no money involved here. So one last factor I just want to point out, I think there's a confusion by Mockingbird under two distinct concepts. One is there's the right to take property, the power to condemn. The other one is the right to sue. That's the power to sue. The cases that they cite almost exclusively deal with this concept of, does the legislature give me the power to condemn this type of property? That's not jurisdictional. It's right to take. Do I have the power to take this type of property? None of those cases look at the threshold issue of first impression presented here, which is there a right to sue? Has immunity from suit been waived? So in totality, you look at this statute of the utility code, as well as its predecessor statutes. There's no explicit waiver of immunity. You look at the four Taylor factors, and those factors overwhelmingly support an interpretation that the legislature did not, through this legislation, intend to enable pipeline companies to condemn property of cities without the city's consent. We ask that the court reverse the trial court's
denial. How do you explain the following, the statute that comes right after that about the street? That's got to get permission from the city. The point of that if 184 prohibits the suit to start with?
Very good question, Justice McCoy. There's three parts to that statute. The first part says at section 004, they can condemn property.
And 05 says...
0005 says You can put your lines in city streets without condemning property. In other words, publicly dedicated streets that are already there, pipeline companies already have a right to go in those streets. You know, it's a complicated, the entire statutory scheme is set out in our reply brief, that entire section 181.005. But in a nutshell, basically it's designed to allow condemning authorities to go into public dedicated right-of-ways without having to file suit. The kicker is that when you're going into a city's right-of-way, you have to get the city's consent. So in the whole legislative scheme, it seems to be very, it would be very illogical to say that the legislature intended to give cities an absolute veto on the placement of pipelines within city streets, which obviously has much less impact on the community than crisscrossing city halls, city parks, fire stations, libraries, etc., but not give the city that same right to basically veto a condemnation across other public property. And they have that right. They have that right through immunity from suit, and they have the right to control their city streets through the non-litigation process of saying, you can come in our streets under 1005, but you have to get our consent and our direction. We can tell you how deep the pipelines have to go, et cetera.
Okay, we'll discuss that a little bit further.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thacker.
May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, my partner, Sam Burke, worked on this case, did the briefing in this matter, and he called me last night about 9 o'clock, and he was quite sick and unable to appear this morning. So I'm here to address the court on his behalf.
Make Sam Burke pay.
I'm sorry?
Make Sam Burke pay.
As the court knows, condemnation is the taking of property. The sovereign power to take the property is limited in two ways. It must be for a public purpose, and just compensation must be paid. When the power of condemnation is conferred on an entity, it can be exercised in only one way, by filing a lawsuit. The Beaumont Court of Appeals observed in state versus Montgomery County, when the legislature grants the right to condemn public lands, the granting of that right is a clear expression of an intent to waive sovereign immunity. Therefore, the question before this court is simply, was the right to condemn public property delegated by the legislature to gas corporations? The answer to that question is yes, and this court will not be skipping a step by finding a waiver of immunity. It will be reaching a logical conclusion consistent with the obvious intent of the legislature, as the Beaumont Court of Appeals did in State versus Montgomery. The town has created an interesting argument in that, if it were correct, it would mean that the courts of this state have failed to recognize or analyze the limits of their own jurisdiction in condemnation cases for approximately 100 years. I believe it's more likely that the courts and municipalities have instead understood that the power to condemn public land was granted to gas corporations in 1911. And where that power has been conferred, immunity either does not apply or has been waived. As the town concedes in its reply brief on page 6 at footnote 4, courts have interpreted the applicable statutes and codes to grant gas corporations such power, that is, the right to condemn. The town's only criticism of this holding is that the statute does not expressly grant the power to condemn public land. The town doesn't argue that the courts that held Articles 1436 and 1437 granted the power to condemn public land were incorrectly decided. When you consider this, I think the town's argument would lead to a rule that a statute that grants the power to condemn public property has to clearly waive immunity. It has to be clear and convincing waiver, clear and convincing if it's not waiving immunity. I believe the town's argument incorrectly sets the rules of construction necessary to decide this case in competition with one another, when in fact they can be and should be applied together to reach the correct result. I think the applicable rules of construction are as follows. Acts that encourage a great and expensive public works project to secure public advantages should receive a liberal construction in favor of the purposes for which they were enacted. The grant of express authority to public service corporations carries with it every other power necessary and proper to the execution of the authority that's granted. In the absence of some statutory provision, expressly or by implication forbidding it, property devoted to one public use may, under general statutory authority, be taken for another public use. The beginning of the code says it, that the codification of the utilities code was part of the codification of the state's general law and permanent statute law with no substantive change. And the poll star for determining a waiver of governmental immunity is legislative intent. The section 181.004 of the Texas Utilities Code is, of course, the statute in question, and was prior to codification of it contained in the Texas Revised Civil Statutes as 1436. In applying the first rule of construction, 181.004, the legislature recognized the need for entities to create an infrastructure to transport the valuable resource of natural gas throughout the state and outside of the state. 181.004 authorized utility companies to lay lines for its purposes, and the court should liberally construe section 181.004. In 1911, the Texas legislature created gas corporations. At the time, statutes granting the power to appropriate lands from the private land necessary to the purposes of such corporations by necessary implication granted the power and authority to appropriate from the public domain, even though no express authority was given in the statute. In the 1920s, it had become the accepted rule of statutory construction with regard to the statutes conferring power of eminent domain that in the absence of some statutory provision expressly or by implication forbidding it, property devoted to one public use may, under general statutory authority, be taken for another public use. The right to take property for gas pipelines can only be exercised by filing a lawsuit if the municipality doesn't agree. The statutory authority at the time gas corporations were given the right to take private property included the right to take public property. If the legislature desired to put limitations on the power to condemn public property, those limitations needed to be written in. The grant of authority to lay the pipeline necessarily implies the grant of every other power necessary to effectuate the power to lay the pipeline. And that includes across and under property belonging to the state. And I believe that's the Humble versus State Austin Court of Appeals in 1928 case. Applying these rules to Articles 1436 and 1437, which granted the power to transport and sell gas and construct the pipelines necessary for this purpose, at and between different points in the state, and to own such lands, right of way as may be necessary for these purposes, and the right to condemn the property of any person or corporation for this purpose. The intent to grant the right to take public property is clear. The town does not question this interpretation of these statutes. I think the Galveston Court of Appeals described the intent of the legislature best when it held, emphasizing the public policy in Texas, the statute delegating condemnation authority to gas corporations places no express restrictions upon gas corporations to condemn land for the prosecution of the business it had been chartered to carry on. That's
okay.
All.
Okay, I realize you're at a disadvantage, and so you're reading, and so it's kind of not
fair. I apologize.
Sure. I understand. Do you know if y'all looked for some sort of parallel statutes that give an entity or a person the right to do something, but in doing it, it may involve suing a municipality or a state entity, and where then immunity came into play? I mean, I've just got to think with the no man is safe when the legislature's in session and there's laws being passed and there's so many statutes out there allowing people to do something, you would think that there were some that in certain circumstances would by necessity involve them bringing suit against the state or whatever, right, who could then invoke immunity, and how that had fallen out.
Your Honor, if it's not in our brief, you know, okay. I don't believe.
Well, it might mean you really looked and you couldn't find any, or it might mean
we didn't think to look.
Well, I'm not saying that. All right, so don't know. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask counsel that same question here in a minute.
To me, Your Honor, it just seems implicit in the statute allowing gas pipelines to operate their business and to do the public purpose that it was enacted to do, that the gas pipeline ought to have the ability to condemn even from municipalities who want to be difficult. The pipeline that we're trying to put in isn't going to affect their use of that property for a fire station, which is what's there. I think we intend to parallel other lines that are already present. It's almost, to me, inconceivable to think that they're going to hide behind some immunity from suit in a situation where we're trying to give them money to improve the public world. So it's my two bits off of Sam's outline. I think that when you apply those rules of statutory construction that we set out, I think you have to come back to the state versus Montgomery case that says when the legislature grants the right to condemn public lands, the granting of that right is a clear expression of an intent to waive sovereign immunity. The statute would be meaningless if the pipeline didn't apply to cities. It would give the pipeline no ability to lay its pipe in a way that makes sense and that best gets the gas where it needs to go in an economical manner.
What was the name of that case?
State versus Montgomery. And I'm sure it's in our brief, Your Honor. I don't see a site in this outline, but I'm sure it is in our brief. The normal course of things over the past 100 years in a case like this would simply be to determine if there is another state interest that can coexist with or is paramount to the current use of the governmentally held property. And if so, the land should be taken and the governmental property owner should be justly compensated. We do dispute the line of cases of State versus Lane insofar as a suit to condemn is different than a suit to try title. It's not a question about who has title or that type of thing. A condemnation suit is actually a suit to change title. It's a fee taking or an easement, depending on what's needed, but it's a suit to change title. It's not one to argue about who has title. So I think that is a distinction. The town would not accept all offers and refused requests to make counteroffers. I think the public trust is relevant. It's in the interest of the public to have property held on their behalf, used for as many legislatively mandated purposes that can coexist, or for the determined paramount purpose. In this type of case, it's the public interest for all parties defer to the safest location for pipelines that have already been legislatively prioritized by the state. I believe, let's see, the question is, should the legislative grant of the right of eminent domain, which included the right to condemn public property, be essentially revoked as it pertains to municipalities like the town? And the answer has to be no. There would be no purpose in granting the right to take property if governmental immunity applied. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thacker.
For example, I'm thinking you have a right to carry. And I imagine there's a statute that says if you fulfill all these requirements, you have a right to carry. But if the state won't issue you a right to carry license, can you sue them? Or can the state say, sorry, and any of you can sue? So have you looked? I mean, there's no
parallel situation. Oh, in terms of that context on denial of a right to concealed weapon? Well, I know that there are, and it's not that's in the record, but I know there's various procedures set out administratively in the
Texas. My question is, have y'all looked for parallel examples where somebody theoretically could have to sue the state over a right given to it by statute? And then if there is, was immunity invoked, and what happened? I mean, something similar to what's here.
Well, we've looked, well, the contract line of cases, obviously, are out there where some for years someone, you know, said, I can sue a city for a contract, and said they couldn't do it. Perhaps the closest thing, Your Honor, is the state versus Montgomery case that Ms. Thacker was talking about, and that is cited in our, state versus Montgomery County. It is cited in the brief. It's a Beaumont Court of Appeals case, and there the question was, could Montgomery County condemn land owned by the state? And immunity from suit was raised, and the court said they could because the legislation gave Montgomery County the express grant of the right to take public or private land. So you look at the utility code; it didn't say that.
I know.
Here or there.
I know.
Same thing with city. My city clients condemn land. Texas Local Government Code 251.001A says cities can condemn public or private property. So the legislature has certainly, when they've intended to allow an entity with condemnation authority to condemn property, public property, they've said it. You know, they want you to, by implication, reading into old cases that predate modern immunity from suit jurisprudence, imply a right to sue governmental entities for condemnation. Those cases don't address that. The only analysis that is appropriate is the modern analysis, you know, the Taylor factors, and those factors just categorically would prohibit this type of condemnation. Once again, there's a big difference between the right to take, the power to sue, and the actual right to sue, the ability to waive immunity.
Okay, so y'all looked and couldn't find any parallel examples.
We looked, we found no parallel cases that we felt that had any relevance that we could bring to this court.
Of course, you wouldn't be wanting to find any. So.
Well, we, all due respect, I looked at everything I could find under this immunity from suit concept, and like I said, really before about 1997, it was pretty much dead.
I guess you would want to be, because if you could find one where they had a right to something and they tried to exercise it and they sued the state, and the case was, nope, sorry, immunity, you can't sue the state, and that would benefit you, so I withdraw my...
No, there are cases that are in the tort area, but those are all addressed by the Tort Claims Act. Contracts are addressed by the government code. Declaratory judgments are addressed by the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. Most of these areas have been legislatively addressed, is in this condemnation case where we don't have that thing. And just getting back to the question you had before, Justice McCoy, if I have time, on this question of the section that allows consent to cross a road, it's important to look at there's two different parts of that law. Section 181.004 is the part that says pipelines can condemn land.
Right.
005 says they don't have to condemn land. They can go in existing city streets, TxDOT right away, if they meet the requirements. I mean, it's got some provisions about what they have to do to go into TxDOT right away, et cetera, and there's no need to condemn. And then Section 006 says, but if you're going into a city right away, you have to get the city's consent. So while Mockingbird has said we're going to upset the apple cart and that we have some absolute veto to their ability to expand their great and expensive enterprise, the legislature has clearly said you can't cross a road. You can't parallel a road unless we say yes. And we can say yes with all the bells and whistles conditioned. We've got an absolute right to veto that. I don't think it's any stretch of the imagination to say that the impact on a community of having a pipeline go along a road is certainly less than the impact on the community on pipelines crisscrossing city halls, public parks, libraries, fire stations, city halls.
Well, are there cases under that statute where consent wouldn't be given and they tried to sue the city and the city invoked immunity?
Well, and the city can't. I think the legislature recognizes the importance of local control. And in the litigation context,
my question was, are there cases under that statute where the city wouldn't give consent and they get sued, and the city says, sorry, you can't sue us for not giving consent, immunity. Did we look
I'm not aware of any cases where a lawsuit has been brought against on the question of whether or not you can withhold consent, because it seems that absolutely you can. But if you take those two schemes together, put together, it seems illogical to me that the legislature would protect the rights of cities to cross streets, which has minimal impact on the community, and not protect their right to have lines crisscrossing the community through an explicit waiver of immunity. We ask that the court reverse and render in favor of the town of Plymouth.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments. And your case is submitted.